You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of the Doing the Work podcast, as tonight we discuss some new activity for the IU women's basketball team. I'm your host, Jeff Marlowe, here with my co-host, Kathy Amos, and today we're here with you for another edition of Doing the Work, the new show on the Back Home Network dedicated to covering IU women's basketball. Today we will catch up on some news, and then we'll be discussing the way too early top 25, the possible 22-23 schedule, and finally, answering a few of your questions. As we do most shows, we start our show with our banner moment. And tonight's banner moment occurred on June 3rd when Terry Morn announced the hiring of Linda Sayavongchan as her new assistant coach. And I believe I pronounced that right, Sayavongchan. And I'm just going to refer to her as Coach Sai, Kathy. And she's been hired as assistant coach and recruitment coordinator. She comes from Creighton, where she spent the last seven seasons in the same role. She has worked with both guards and post players at Creighton. And the Blue Jays made three NCAA tournaments, including this past season, where they upset Iowa on their way to their first ever Sweet 16 and Elite Eight appearance before losing to South Carolina. Prior to Creighton, she spent 2 years at St. Louis, 1 year at North Dakota, and 3 years at her alma mater, Drake. Welcome to Bloomington, Coach Sai. Our banner moment is sponsored by Home Field Apparel. Did you know that among all the t-shirts Back Home has available, they have one specific to IU staff member Allie Patberg, former Hoosier, showing off her passion? Yep, just go to homefieldapparel.com and search for Allie. And if you support other college teams or have people in your life who do, Home Field probably has something for them too. Their product line now extends to more than 120 different schools with unique vintage logos for all of them. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME, H-O-M-E, to get 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. And once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. So, Kathy, I'm going to start off with a little bit of past news. You brought this up last week and about Alexa Golbe signing with Avenida in Salamanca in the Spanish League. And then it got me to doing some research about the Spanish Women's League. Salamanca, the Avenida team is one of the best, and maybe the best in Spain. They won the league last year. They were 28-2 during the season. They've captured five of the last six playoff titles in Spain, and they've been in the playoff finals 16 straight years. So that's quite a place for Alexa to have ended up.
Yeah, absolutely. I read those notes that you're able to find, and that was great, because before our show last week, I was actually trying to find some more information, and I find it very, either I don't know how to do Google searches, or it's just elusive to me. I'm not sure which we can go with, maybe a combination of both, but I was really excited when I saw those stats from her in that team, and I thought that's really exciting for her. And so it'll be great to see if we can get information as they, you know, proceed into their season next year to see how she fits into that team, especially being one of the premier teams in that league.
Yeah, and when you look at it, you know, that's probably a good place for her to maybe to get her career started, where she won't maybe be expected as a former American college player to maybe come in and carry the load.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I know I saw her roster somewhere, but I didn't recognize any of the names. So I'm just intrigued by the whole thing. So I think I mentioned last week on the podcast too, Spain is one of the favorite places I've been. So, and of course, with your next headline, I won't steal. I think maybe I plan a trip to Spain next year.
Which is interesting, because you're talking, we'll get to that in a second, but just for our fans who aren't as familiar with Spain, and I didn't know exactly where Salamanca was, it's in the western part of Spain, more toward the Portuguese border. So she'll be kind of away from a Barcelona, even, you know, farther away from Madrid than maybe people, you know, familiar with Barcelona and Madrid. Also, I'll put in here that the Spanish league playoff is very similar to the NBA playoff system. But everything's best of three. So your first seed plays the eight and play best of three and so on. But then it changed up a little bit this year, but also like European soccer, they have relegation. So if you're the bottom two teams in the league, you get relegated down a league, almost like if you're the two worst teams in the NBA get relegated to the G League, and the two best teams from that league promote up. So there is some obviously back and forth movement there a little bit, but I did want to put this out there. The website I found this information on was eurobasket.com. And I think you can find a lot of European information there. For example, I know his season's over now, but if he were going back, Jordan Halls, I think you could find more information about his team. And there were some questions in the community about where you could watch these games. And I'm not sure if you can watch here, but you probably can at least follow at this website. And that's eurobasket.com is where I found that information. And then Kathy, I'll kind of let you take the lead on this one. But yesterday, another big announcement for one of our Hoosiers.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of dovetailing, I kind of alluded this when we were talking about Alexa, but Nicole Cardano-Hillary also signed a contract with the Spanish League. She is playing with IDK Euskotren in San Sebastian. San Sebastian, also for those of us that are geographically challenged, especially in our Spanish geography, San Sebastian is in the northeast corner and part of the Basque country up there. So in terms of the team, not quite as high as what Alexa's team is, but IDK did finish seventh last year in their league as well. And interesting, the same website you were talking about, they actually have Nicole penciled in as a starter as their starting point guard. So again, very excited to have yet another player going overseas and trying to make a go of it in the professional realm. So I had a question for you, Jeff. I wasn't quite sure, but is there any possibility that their two teams would play each other then? Were you able to figure that out?
They'll play twice. Like I said, a very similar to kind of the European soccer model from that standpoint, Kathy. Every team, you get a home and home, not necessarily right back to back, but you'll play once at their place, once at your place. And then so they'll play against each other twice. And I was just getting ready to say that. I didn't have it in notes, but I guess for our Hoosier fans, our workaholics, you know, if we're really trying to watch a game, maybe follow the schedule and see when Avenida and IDK are playing each other just to see if those two go up against each other in the game. But I really was amazed. I mean, yesterday, they just announced her signing around noon yesterday, and I was looking this up around 5-ish, 6-ish here Central Time in Rensselaer. And that Eurobasket site already had her marked as being a starter, which was, I thought, was kind of ironic because Lex signed a week or so ago, maybe 10 days ago, and she hadn't really kind of been fitted into whether it was, a starter or a reserve. I highly doubt she's going to be penciled in as a starter, but they hadn't even listed her other than just being on the roster. So that was, I thought that was interesting that somebody over there with IDK really thinks a lot of Nikki to pencil, or at least on that website, to pencil her in as a starter, on the day she signed.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and somebody, I feel like they did their homework on Nikki. That's what I'm going with for sure. And, she's bringing a lot to the table, and definitely her defense, as we know. So if same thing there, I'll be very excited to see if we can follow them, whether it's just on Twitter or not, but see if we can follow their careers over there as they start branching out.
And then yesterday also, Grace Berger and incoming transfer Alyssa Gary announced deals with Campus Inc. For those of our fans who haven't been following along, Campus Inc. has actually been around for a long time. But now with the NIL becoming a big part of the game, Mark Cuban has put up a ton of money. I don't know if I should say alum. I'm never quite sure. Is he actually an alum or just a super fan?
No, he's an alum. Yeah.
Okay, because I saw someone sometimes said he hadn't graduated, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Mr. Cuban, so I'm going to call him alum then. Yeah. But IU alum Mark Cuban has sunk a lot of money into Campus Inc., and maybe some of our fans saw this because I saw some comments in the community yesterday about Grace and Alyssa and a couple, a couple of the guys as well. Jalen Hood-Schifino and Malik Renaud also have signed with Campus Inc., but they're selling jerseys. And I believe that's just basically a t-shirt that looks like a jersey, or at least has the Indiana with the number and then the name of the player on the back. Whereas right now a true Indiana jersey obviously doesn't have the name on the back, but there's going to be other apparel. I did look at it. It's the NIL store, and I looked at that website today, and they didn't have anything quite there yet, but I would imagine it'll take a little bit of time, but I would imagine you're going to see a lot more than just those two IU women's players in the NIL store.
Yeah, I agree. I was kind of surprised that Alyssa Geary was one of the first two, actually, from the women's team. I think applause to her for sure, trying to get herself out there and recognized and everything by the fans right away. But I thought for sure I would have thought our two dynamic duo that we think of Grace and McKenzie would have been our two. So I thought that was very interesting to me. So I'm very excited for them. And I'm with you, Jeff. I think this is just, we're going to see most of the players probably get some kind of deal to at least try to sell the jerseys, I guess. I've never heard that term. That was a new one for me. So
I never had either.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm assuming it's like a t-shirt that has their number and their name on the back and some kind of logo on the front. So yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Kathy, I'll just give you an opportunity. Is there anything you'd like to add to these three bullet points that we started off with, or anything else maybe I missed that's newsworthy?
Yeah, I think I've commented on all of them except for Coach Tsai and her hiring. And I don't have a whole lot to add there other than, yeah, I'm kind of excited. There are, you know, as again, for those of our people that have been listening for all know that I live in Des Moines. So it's kind of neat to have somebody with ties to the area. She actually graduated from high school in Des Moines as well, one of our public high schools here. So I thought that was really cool to see someone from Lincoln High School here in Des Moines that has made, you know, a great career of it in women's basketball and staying still in the Midwest area. You know, she's been at Creighton and playing at Drake here. The farthest away, I guess, she's gotten is North Dakota. So I'm just pretty excited from her after reading some of her, you know, she started out, I think, with the smaller players and then moved to the big. So she has experience coaching on both. And it looked like she had some really great comments from other folks as well around her recruiting skills. So I think this is seems like, at least on paper, a really great hire for us. I'm pretty excited for her to be added to the staff.
And I will say the last week I was on here predicting that Tyra Buss would not to be surprised if Tyra Buss filled that spot. Obviously, I was off on that, but congrats to Coach Tsai and welcome, like I said, to Bloomington. And I think, but again, I like that hire for Terry Morin just because she went out, and I'm not saying it's going to correlate, but she picked off somebody from Creighton who has had experience at Division I level, a lot of experience at Division I level. And obviously, we struggled with Iowa last year, and maybe she can bring something that will help us with Iowa this coming season.
Right. That's true, because she coached Creighton. And again, for those of you who follow women's basketball and watch the tournament, Creighton knocked off Iowa last year in the tournament. So I watched that game. That was something that Creighton team could shoot the ball. So I was pretty excited to see that too.
And not only beat them, but basically kept it to a pretty low scoring game for Iowa.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, it got close there for a while, but they did open it up in parts of that game. So yeah, maybe she's got the key, which I'm sure we'll get to in our next topic, is going to be very important to figure out how to unlock that Iowa team.
So we'll move on, and we're going to take a look at the way too early top 25. And unlike the men's basketball side, the women's doesn't have a ton of way too early. But Charlie Cream at ESPN has put out a couple different versions, one pre-portal and one kind of post-portal that I thought was really interesting. And so we'll use his list. And I'm not going to go through the entire top 25, Kathy. I just thought I'd hit the top 15 and then the Big Ten teams that were also in there. But it's kind of still the story in women's basketball. And this will kind of get where maybe, because we have a question later on that we're going to answer about the NCAA tournament when we take some questions from our workaholics in the community. But it's still kind of a blue blood list. When you really look at the teams here in the top 10, 12, 15, there's a few. Indiana's in this list, but that you wouldn't necessarily maybe consider a blue blood for a long period of time. But Indiana has definitely earned their way in here. So at number one, ESPN had South Carolina. Number two, UConn, which that didn't surprise me at all. I was a little surprised UConn wasn't number one. Three, Stanford. Four, Texas. Five, Iowa, which is the highest rated Big Ten team. Number six, Tennessee. Number seven, Notre Dame. Eight, Iowa State, another team right in your backyard pretty much. Nine, Louisville. 10, North Carolina. And then Charlie Cream and ESPN had Indiana at 11. 12, North Carolina State. 13, Oklahoma. 14, Virginia Tech. And then 15, Ohio State. So three Big Ten teams in that top 15. Let's stick with that for a second, Kathy. I wasn't surprised by those three, nor pretty much the order, but I think those are the three teams we're going to see toward the top of the Big Ten race this year.
Yeah, I that's me too.
And wait, real quick, before I throw it back to you, But then Maryland was 16. So the top four were in the top 16 had four. And I think those, Maryland retooled. Give Brenda Freeze credit in the portal. She did a pretty good job of rebuilding that roster. But I think those are the four teams you're probably going to see fighting it out at the top of the Big Ten.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff. You actually, that's exactly what I was just going to say. And knocking on the door of the top 15 is Maryland. I think the biggest surprise for me was Maryland, to be honest with you, because they lost so much to the transfer portal. So, you know, they already had lost them last year. And of course, she was able to retool. But then to turn around this year and they lost both Angel Reese and Owusu, I just thought that those seemed to be really huge holes to fill on that team in particular, because I didn't feel last year they were particularly that deep. But yeah, I mean, credit to Free, she went out to that portal and she's bringing in a lot of players, including one, Abby Myers, that might ring familiar to those familiar with the team last year that we beat barely in the NCAA tournament to get the Sweet 16 from Princeton. And Abby was a really fantastic player in the game that I was able to watch of her. So it'll be interesting to see how they are able to take the, I think they had four players that came in through the transfer portal, and see how they can fit them in to replace the two that they lost in Reese and Owusu. But yeah, in terms of the order, I'm not surprised at all with Iowa being there in the top five. I mean, they probably would have been top five as it was with just having, you know, their two returning players of Sonano and of course,
Caitlin Clark,
goodness. Complete brain freeze. But you're then fine. They go out and they add in, you know, Kate Martin and a few other transfers as well. So I just think that's an interesting, interesting team that we're going to have to definitely watch out for.
And I'll kind of start, like you started with Maryland. They were kind of an ugly breakup with Reese and Owusu when they left. I mean, there was not very kind comments in their statements that when they were leaving toward the program. But like I said, Brenda Freeze did a nice job of finding, and maybe finding fits for especially this coming year, and to try and bridge the recruiting a little bit. And again, like you said, the girl from Princeton, who I really was impressed with when I went back and watched some of the NCAA tournament after I got back from my trip to Spain and didn't get a chance to see those first couple round games. She, you know, that Princeton team, and I want to say they were in the top in that list of the top 25 in there. So they're, again, they're well respected as well. So, but I agree. I thought Iowa, you know, it's hard to say that I would think I was better than Stanford or UConn or South Carolina, maybe Texas, but I think they got Iowa at least based on with all they have coming back. You have to assume she's going to be a favorite or a co-favorite of Paige Becker's to be the preseason player of the year nationally. Yeah. I think that pretty much puts them in there. Before talking about IU, kind of look at that next group, Kathy. Kind of an interesting mix. Tennessee, kind of an old blue blood, but has not been a blue blood. Kind of like IU men, has really kind of lost after Pat Summitt retired and unfortunately passed away. Kind of lost, you know, their aura. But now back in the top six. Notre Dame had a down year a couple years ago, but now back to the Sweet 16 this year. I've always been a big fan of Bill Finelli at Iowa State and thought that they've had a very good program. And then you throw in Louisville and North Carolina. And then, so I'll go back to there. You have Notre Dame, Louisville, Carolina, three ACC teams in that group of five. And we're going to talk about scheduling here a little bit, so I'm not going to try and take away from that. But some interesting teams in that list that aren't very far from Bloomington.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Notre Dame one in particular is intriguing to me, and I won't get into them a whole lot, but until we, you know, get into scheduling and some matchups and things perhaps. But not surprised at Iowa State being in that top 10 either. They have been perennially here, you know, a very reliable team, if you will, getting into NCAA, being at the top of the Big 12 for very, very consistent amount of time. So, you know, they I think that eight might be surprising at the end of the year if we don't see them actually move up from what I know about them. So, you know, well, it's so hard to know right now. Of course, that's why it's way too early. But those two in particular, I think, are intriguing to me in that top, you know, 6 through 10 range. So I'll be excited to watch those teams.
So let's talk about the Hoosiers. Were you surprised by the IU women at 11 or maybe surprised they were that low? Either way, were you surprised?
Yes, I would say I'm still a little surprised that they were actually that high. You know, they are coming off a back-to-back Sweet 16, but again, I think we have a lot of open questions for our team. And in my mind, there's really three. Are we going to be able to shoot the ball a little better? I think we, you know, filled some gaps with Sarah Scalia coming in that, and Sydney Parrish that hopefully will fill that gap. Are we going to be able to play deeper than just, you know, we're mainly six players last year, little seven dabbling here and there. I just think we have to play deeper. And I think my biggest question mark for this team and why I'm not quite sure I feel 11 is appropriate is just the chemistry. I mean, we are losing so many people, you know, three of our five starters from last year and three major contributors. And I know we're bringing in some great transfers and we have a really good freshman class coming in, but just because they look great on paper doesn't mean the chemistry is going to be there. And I know Coach Morin loves to hang her hat on defense, and that's so, you know, based on communication and talking with each other. Those are my three big question marks that maybe for me, I'm not sure I would have put them quite so high.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. I thought maybe IU would rank in there between 15 and 20. I thought maybe a little better spot, the slotting for them. I think two things here that Charlie Cream has given credit to. I think Terry Morin has proven that she can win games and with her philosophy and her style. And I think it speaks well to what Charlie Cream thinks of what Mackenzie Holmes and Grace Berger bring to the program. That you bring back essentially two all Big Ten players. Before Mackenzie got hurt, she probably would have been an all Big Ten player. And then possibly two All-Americans. So I think that speaks to that. But I agree with you. I think the chemistry will be something we have to see early in the season. You got to try and, you know, learn to put the new pieces of the puzzle together. And then I think the other part you said is defense. I will be interested to see if maybe we give just a little bit on the defensive side to get a little more offense and play maybe. Also, will we play – and I know we scored a lot of points – but there were times when I felt like we kind of grinded games because that was a style that could win with the roster we had. But will we play just a little bit faster? Will we try to push the consistent tempo to a mid to high 70s offensive, and then, you know, or maybe even a low 80 and see what you can do from there? But I that'll be something I'm interested in, is just will we sacrifice a little bit of the defense? Because Allie and Nikki and Lex were such great defensive players. Everybody wants to look at their points. And again, I understand that.
Sure.
I was a scorer in high school. I like points, but when you really think about those three, it was their defensive of capabilities. Lex, who could guard three, maybe four spots. Nikki just doing everything we get accustomed to. Allie could guard two and maybe a third spot if you needed to. So I think that's where you're going to really miss them and have to find a way to plug that gap with the newcomers, whether they're recruits or transfers.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the only other team from the Big Ten in the Way Too Early Top 25 for ESPN, Charlie Cream, was number 24, Nebraska. And I did like that because I think Nebraska is a team that's kind of below the radar for most people nationally. But we saw this team last year beat Indiana in Lincoln, give us a tough game in Bloomington. So this is a team that really, if people aren't paying attention to, may surprise a little bit nationally. I'm not sure it will surprise a lot of us in the doing the work and the workaholics who follow the program a little closer. But I think they might surprise some people nationally.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, I think Nebraska is one that can sneak up there on people in the Big Ten as well if they're not paying attention, which I'm sure they will. From a coaching perspective, but I mean, they returned their top four scorers, right, from last year. I think that's what I had read. So you get your top four scorers back. You already got team chemistry. We already know that, you know, they came really close to beating other teams and not just us in the Big Ten last year. And then I just think that backcourt that they have is so experienced together. I think they're going to be a tough team to play next year.
Yeah, and I don't want to speak too much about the rest of the Big Ten yet. We may save that for a little bit later in the summer or in the preseason. But I think you will see kind of a big gap, or not a big gap, but you'll see a gap between the top, let's say, six, maybe seven teams in the Big Ten, and then what's the bottom part of the Big Ten. I think Purdue has a chance maybe to move into that top six. But other than that, I think that bottom seven or eight is really going to be kind of a jumbled mess, and who finishes where, I think we'll just have to play out. But I don't really see a group in there right now that can say all of a sudden catch lightning in a bottle and jump into that top four or five.
Right. I agree. The other one I needed to dig into more, of course, I know we'll probably break down the teams coming into the season when we get closer a bit, is Michigan State. I think that they might, again, I have to see who left and who's coming back, but I would think they would be probably one of the top half of the Big Ten. I don't think they'll crack the top five per se, but I think they could definitely make some noise here and there, and just maybe one or two games that surprise people, but, like they did last year when they helped us out a little bit. So.
Yeah, but the big loss there is Clowden, who is right. The big-time scorer. And again, what Coach Merchant's been able to do, with the portal, I haven't paid as much attention to. And that's why I said I don't want to get too deep into that other part of the Big Ten. But we know the top five in the Big Ten have the capability of being good teams. And if you look at where that – let's say IU holds to that projection of 11, they will host a first-round and second-round game again next year. Yep. And that's huge. In the women's tournament, that's huge.
It is. Yep.
So speaking of some of those teams, the IU program, the athletic department hasn't released the upcoming schedule, but would have to suspect that we'll be, I kind of phrased this wrong. We will be part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge because there's only 14 Big Ten teams and there's 15 ACC. So there's one of the ACC teams that always gets left out. We played North Carolina State at home last year. And so I would expect us to be on the road. All right. So let's use that as a criteria before I throw this to you. Expect us to be on the road. Could play North Carolina State again, but I doubt it. I think you'll see North Carolina State get another one of those top tier Big Ten teams, maybe a Maryland because of former ACC game there. But so here were the three I really thought were intriguing. Kathy, I'm going to kind of throw them to you. What do you think about Louisville?
I mean, they're
clearly, and more about just playing them more than what you think of their personnel, but just about playing Louisville.
Absolutely. Yeah. Louisville, again, I mean, they're in that very top echelon of the ACC. They finished second last year to NC State, only lost two conference games. So, if they're going to replicate what they had last year, and I'm trying to remember where they had them in the top 25, but I'm pretty sure they were in the top 10.
Number nine.
Yes. I knew it was in the top 10. I couldn't remember exactly where. So you got a great top 10 matchup again. We're knocking on the door of that top 10. And again, if we want to be that team that says we're going to get to the Final Four, you have to play teams like this. And then of course, the proximity is always intriguing as well with how close they are to where we're at. And Grace is from Louisville. So I think that's an intriguing matchup for sure.
That's a great point. And then, for example, going back to Louisville even more so, because like I said, I expect us to be on the road. So go to the Yum Center and play Louisville. What would really be a marquee matchup in that ACC Big Ten Challenge, and two teams that have not played a whole lot. I mean, I was looking a little bit. I don't know the entire history, but it's not like IU and Louisville women play every year or every other year. It's not something. But to me, that'd be a great rivalry to kind of get going for a little bit and maybe get something going, because you're both kind of fighting for that same turf in recruiting too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So then we'll throw it to the ACC team that's inside the state.
Yes.
Notre Dame.
I really like this matchup for us. I got to watch a bit of them, obviously, in the tournament last year, and I thought Notre Dame just played with an incredible amount of fire, discipline, and heart out there. And on top of it, they have, their center, Lauren Ebo, who is, again, it's a transfer in from Texas, so you never know how she's going to play, but she's 6'4", which right away gives McKenzie a very difficult matchup that's going to happen before she gets into conference play. So I like this Notre Dame, the matchup that I think it would bring us. Again, it would be a very interesting matchup, again, because we have a lot of transfers and they have a lot of transfers, and who can get those teams to mesh. On paper, it looks like they're obviously a top 10 team as well. So I think this gives us a great, great experience to have in that ACC challenge.
Well, and also, again, probably on the road. So, but a team that, like Notre Dame, for years, who dominated kind of the elite recruiting here in Indiana for the high school talent.
Right.
And they kind of lost that a little bit. And Terry Morn has picked up some of that slack a little bit. But I was thinking more along the line, what if they could figure a way, and it probably have to be on campus, I'm sure, but wouldn't it be neat to say play IU women, Notre Dame women at the field house in Annapolis for the ACC Big Challenge?
And you have Allie who went there as well.
Right? Just imagine if Allie was still playing.
Right. That would be even a no-brainer, wouldn't it, for her?
And then the last one I kind of thought, because of using the way too early top 25, North Carolina was right in front of us. I think they finished third or fourth in the league last year, and we were technically fifth in the standings and were second in the tournament. So maybe they try to slot that 4-5 type matchup, go to Chapel Hill. Kind of, you know, we don't think of IU North Carolina as a rivalry on the women's side, but obviously the men have had some great battles with them over the years.
Yeah, I definitely don't know as much about North Carolina other than, you know, what I can find here. So, you know, another top 10 matchup. So, you know, you lose some of that, those storylines that we talked about with Louisville or with Notre Dame. But still, you know, another top 10 matchup is not something I think we would want to shy away from at all.
And then just kind of some that was in my head, and I kind of stole this from something that Coach Tonsoni and I did a few weeks ago on AC Radio. And just, and again, because we don't know the schedule, but, and I'll kind of group these together. I kind of bolded a point for you in our chat and in our discussion online, but I'll kind of, you know, but what do you think about a Big 12, a Pac 12 type opponent? If we, again, you're only going to get one, you're probably not going to get one from each league, but if you could pick one out of the Big 12 or the Pac 12, would you have somebody you'd really like to see us play?
Yeah. So I know in your Big 12, you mentioned Texas, Oklahoma, and Iowa State. Assuming, again, we get one of those three from the ACC, you're already probably going to have a top 10 team in one of those between Louisville, Notre Dame, and North Carolina. I actually picked somebody from the Big 12 I thought was, which wasn't on your list, which is Baylor.
That's fine.
Yeah, Baylor, to me, you know, they won the Big 12 last year. Yes, they won the Big 12 last year, and they're expected to be down, I guess, is in theory. And they're ranked 20th right now in that too early Big Ten season again. And I think they have a similar story again that we talked about with Notre Dame and with us, where they've lost a lot of players, but they have a lot of players coming in from the transfer portal. They have someone actually coming in from Kentucky, Missouri, and Stanford. So I think that is just like another intriguing matchup for me to see in somebody that's maybe, you know, can get us still a good, fantastic quality win, but maybe not to where we're looking at and staring down another top 10 team that we are with some of the other Big 12 teams that are on that list.
Yeah. And the other one I was thinking, I was kind of thinking along the line of, with that, you're talking about Baylor. The other thing there is they lost their, you know, Kim Mulkey as their coach a couple of years ago. Well, last year was her first year at LSU. So, you know, this will be the second season without Coach Mulkey in Waco. But so I think that's something that's similar Baylor, Notre Dame. You saw Muffet McGraw retire. Notre Dame kind of had a struggle that first year after Muffet retired. But Baylor didn't. Baylor kept kind of going along and winning. Well, the down kind of, again, down may be a top 25 team rather than the top five. You know, will they kind of fall back in a really competitive top Big 12 program or Big 12 conference? I can talk here. Yeah. The one that really jumped out at me here when I was putting this together for us was Oregon, whether it's in Bloomington or in Eugene, with Sidney Parrish coming to IU and just Oregon having had a pretty good program over the last couple of years. And you can also get into kind of the whole Adidas and Nike thing, but I really, to me, I'd be interested in an Oregon matchup. I just think that the style they play, you know, that they have they've been a pretty solid program. And that's kind of what I was looking for out of this. I wasn't looking for necessarily those top 20, 25 teams per se, but just teams that can give you quality wins. Cause I think that's going to be the other thing. You got to have enough wins, but you got to have quality wins too, to get that net in the top 16.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, for example, in the Pac-12, you're not going to want to go out and schedule Washington. That's probably not a team that we want to see on the schedule.
And then I kind of left this out, kind of up in the air right now. I can't find anything of the SEC, whether we're going to play Kentucky next year or not. It may have just been a 2-year contract, and that last year would have been the second year. But assuming we don't play Kentucky, would there be anybody in the SEC that you would be interested in playing?
Again, I always like, you know, those kind of historical matchups and against somebody that's maybe relatively new to being considered in the national spotlight. So to me, Tennessee is intriguing. You know, they've always been thought of as the top, some of the top echelon. But so, you know, and I like that story there. And I think they're kind of, for them, rebuilding, if you will. but boy, that would be a really tough matchup though. I mean, you got another top 5-6 matchup then that you got on your schedule. And do you really want that again, considering the ACC, you know, Big Ten challenge? So Of course on paper, that's, you know, from only looking at SEC, that would be one, but Yeah. What about you? The other one that, you know, I guess people would want to gravitate toward is South Carolina. I don't think that is definitely someone I would want on the schedule next year.
I don't mind playing them if it, like we did there in a couple of years ago, like it was 2 years ago, like played them in the Virgin Islands or someplace down there in the Bahamas and played. That's fine. I just don't necessarily like that as a matchup right now yet. The one that intrigued me going back to Kim Mulkey was LSU. A chance to play another team. LSU for years was a blue blood women's program, really struggled through the last 6, 7, 8 years. And now Kim Mulkey is kind of putting her imprint back in there and just kind of a back to the, you know, kind of trying to rise back up there. The other one I kind of thought about was Mississippi State. And Mississippi State, I know, went to the NCAA tournament, the championship game or the Final Four a couple years in a row, but I'm not sure they're at that level anymore. I did want to answer Joel. Joel is saying he thought we played Oregon a few years ago in the NCAA tournament. I want to say that was Grace's freshman year. I want to say it was 19-20. They beat us in the NCAA second round out there in Oregon, if I recall that correctly. But Joel's right. We did play them in the NCAA tournament 3 or 4 years ago, and I can't remember which. But then kind of look at the rest of these, Kathy. Again, I kind of separate them in the notes, but take a look like at the Big East. Actually, yeah. I was trying to break this up a little bit. Like the Big East or the American, the A-10, and teams I was thinking about here, a Creighton, a DePaul, a Dayton, a South Florida. Good teams, but not necessarily top 25 teams. And again, I realize we're not going to play all of them, but I just kind of want to kind of get your idea of what you thought might be good teams for us to play.
I think the first one that jumped off of that list for me is Creighton. Again, another Midwest school. They're, you know, in a mid-major, but they finished really high. And they had a nice little run last year in the NCAA tournament. And of course, Coach Tsai coming from there always adds that intriguing storyline, which obviously is something I've kind of picked up on this year for picking teams. So to me, that first one that jumped off the page was the Creighton team.
Well, the one that intrigued me out of that list, I like Dayton because it's not hard to get to Dayton, and UD, University of Dayton, has been a pretty regular appearance in the NCAA tournament. So you're not you're going to gain something by playing them and winning that game. The one that really kind of intrigued me was DePaul. Mm-hmm. Doug Bruno has done a great job at DePaul over the years. They always seem to make the NCAA tournament. They're never a top 3 or 4 seed, but they're not an 11 or 12 seed. They're usually right there at 8, 9, 10, 7 to 10, somewhere in there. And so I, you know, again, maybe if you're trying to expand the recruiting a little bit and start looking into a more of a Chicago or at least a suburban Chicago, would you want to go play DePaul like in a home and home over a couple year stretch? And so that was, you know, I thought DePaul was one that intrigued me.
Yeah. The other one too, jumping off the list was Bradley. I'm sorry, not Bradley. Northern Iowa. Again, they didn't win their conference last year, but they're in the top half of top three last year. So again, it's a team that you should be able to go out and beat. It gives you good experience. And it definitely is not something there you're just filling in the schedule either, because I think that's, you know, you want to try to avoid that to make sure that you get enough quality wins, to your point. Excuse me. But yes, the Dayton was the other one that I have on my list.
And then you talked about Northern Iowa, Bradley, and the Missouri Valley, and expand that out to the Mid-American. Maybe now you play somebody two times at your place, once at their place. So you kind of do a 2-for-1 deal. At least that's what they do a lot of time on the men's side. I got a feeling that's what's going to happen more and more on the women's side. But I like the idea of getting a decent MAC team. The problem with the MAC and the Valley is it's, you may get to thinking you're like Buffalo was one that I kind of looked at in the MAC that I think has won the MAC tournament 3 out of the last 5 years or something similar, but they might drop off. And now all of a sudden they're 6th or 7th in the, you know, not likely, but could happen where they drop to 6th or 7th in the MAC. And all of a sudden a team you thought was going to be looking pretty good for your net ends up not being as good from that standpoint. So I kind of like that, but then kind of throw that in there, Kathy. What about some of the other Indiana schools? And I think this is where, when you're IU and you've made that jump into the top 15 kind of consistently here over the last 3-4 years, do you still try to schedule a Ball State? And we kind of had this discussion again on AC Radio a few weeks ago, a Ball State, a Valpo, an Evansville, an Indiana State. Do you still try to schedule them, even though you know it may not help net wise, because they're just going to probably be so low on where they are in the net. But is there benefit to playing at least one Indiana team? Have one Indiana team, non-power Indiana team. You're obviously playing Purdue anyway. We could play Notre Dame in the Big Ten Challenge, but just, you know, one of those mid-American Missouri Valley type schools in the state. Is there value to playing them?
Yeah, you know, I think there is, Jeff, and especially in this coming year. Back to my earlier comment, I my biggest question mark and concern going into next year is just the chemistry of the team and playing a team that maybe again on paper and early on, like a Ball State perhaps would be one that would jump up, because they're not, you know, at the bottom of their half of their conference. They're in the top half, at least they were last year. And then of course you have Indiana State, where Coach Morin came from. So you have a couple of, you know, options there. I don't know where Indiana State really finished, where they're at in their conference ranking. So maybe you can find a team like that, that's in state, that's not perhaps, you know, bottom of the conference. So it doesn't necessarily hurt you per se, or not, you know what I mean? It wouldn't exactly bolster your net, as you said, but I think you just have to make sure you get some of those more cupcake type teams to make sure we have a chance to work on team chemistry and a game type atmosphere. And my other concern is there are bench. We have to get some of our other players a chance to play in some of those games as well, so that maybe we can grow that bench and give those ladies that are sitting a little farther down a chance to start getting that experience.
And I may be off on this a little bit. I'm kind of using some of the men's numbers. Let's assume you've got 29 games, 18 in the Big Ten. So that leaves you 11 non-conference. How many of those 11, assuming you're going to, you know, you're going to play in the Big Ten Challenge, so that's one. How many of those 11 would you like to see be against, say, top 50 type net teams?
Top 50? Oh.
Say top 75.
Sure. Out of 11, I would say at least six, right?
I would say five or six,
somewhere in there. Because again, you don't want to fill your schedule up too much with these types of teams that, you know, like we did have some of these tough games last year with NC State early on and down the Bahamas and Stanford, right? Was the other team we played last year?
Miami. North Carolina State was the challenge game in Bloomington.
Yes. But
it was pretty much right back to back. They went down there and I think they went Stanford, Miami,
and
North Stanford
and Miami. Yes. So, I mean, you want to get a good number of those in there. But gosh, you have to get some balance with, you know, some more medium and, you know, for lack of a better word, those cupcake teams. I think that's just really important.
Okay. So Ari's telling us here in the chat that he thinks it's 13. So now definitely I want six,
right.
Six, maybe seven. And the other thing I would say, and I want to get your opinion on this, then the others, maybe one or two out of those other six, maybe below 200 on the net.
Right.
I want those other four or five to be in that 75 to 150 range.
Yeah, I'm exactly with you. I mean, you don't want to have too many, but you need to have at least a couple in there that are, you know, again, looking back at our schedule and stuff. And then you have some surprising ones, right? Like we went into Quinnipiac last year thinking that was going to be a really easy game and went on the road there in Connecticut for giving Mac a chance to go closer back to our own town and, you know, really didn't squeak that out until the end. So you could have some surprising there too. And I think those are good for the team to work through and to learn and grow from them.
Well, I think one thing that we found out last year in the NCAA tournament, Kathy, is with Princeton is some of those lower level Division I teams that only get one bid, like a Quinnipiac, they are actually pretty good. You know, everybody assumes they're not because it's just not a name you know in the women's programs. But I remember talking with Grace a little bit about Quinnipiac before they went out and played them. And she's like, hey, they're better than people think.
You know,
they're going by their name. Speaking of which, Joel brings up also in the chat, we did play Butler last year. So we did have an Indiana school on the schedule. Will be interesting, Joel, to see if Butler comes to Bloomington this year. I know that game up at Butler was not BTN Plus or anything. Nobody was able to really watch it.
It was on Flow Sports.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
Flow Sports. Like, what is this?
Yeah. And so, but, you know, so in between 13, but I'm with you. I think you need about half in that top 50 to 75 net. Yeah. You know, you don't want to go overboard. I wouldn't say they all need to be top 25. I don't think we're quite to that point. I don't even think most teams are. I don't think UConn is going to play five teams in the top 25, you know, right, every year on their non-conference schedule. So, and maybe they can a little bit because, you know, and that's the other thing now. We discussed, especially you and I, who had a chance to be on with the AC guys, with AC radio guys on the men's side. You know, sometimes the league doesn't do you any favors. If the league isn't as good as it's been the last two or three years, you won't have as many opportunities for those quad one type wins inside the league. So maybe you need to be a little more aggressive in scheduling in the non-conference and, you know, knowing you're going to be competitive enough to win. So, again, I realize a lot of this is speculation. Everybody's like, why are we talking about schedule in June? Well, you know, just something fun to talk about. Yeah, and something fun to talk about. So, Kathy, anything else you want to add about scheduling?
Nope, I don't think so. Not for now. Hopefully, we'll start seeing something trickle out.
Yeah, hopefully, and of course, watch. You know, and we'll see. It'll come like in bunches. So let's go to the mailbag. And let's start with one from Jared, our friend Jared Morris. And Jared, Kathy, I'm going to throw it to you first. I'm curious how you envision the style of play changing, if at all. Let me restart that. Jared's question. I'm curious how you envision the style of play change, if at all, with the new personnel. Will this be a more offensively capable team, but perhaps less able to grind out gritty wins?
So I do think that it will be more offense. And back to your comment as well, I think it is going to be more offensively capable than what we saw last year again. Not that our team wasn't offensively capable last year, but there were definitely times where our offense ground to a halt and we went on long scoring droughts. I really think, in particular with Sarah Scalia coming in, that we're really going to have a lot less of those and be able to open up the floor a lot more with her on it. And I do think that, you know, we have Sydney Parrish coming in and she was a scorer too. So I think we're definitely going to see that on the offensive side. In terms of style of play, I still think Coach Morin will be defensive first, but to your point, maybe we give a little bit on defense and not quite as grinded out and keep them to 60 points or less. But those are my first takes.
Yeah, and answering Jared's question from my side, I agree with you. I think we'll see. I think the shooting will be better. I think one that we haven't talked a lot about yet, and we're going to save for a little bit later in the summer as we talk about some of the other returners. I think Chloe Moore McNeil will also improve her three-point shooting. She showed toward the end of the season that she was getting a little more confidence in that shot. And I think she didn't necessarily have to be a 38, 40% shooter. If she can just make 34, 35% with her first step, that's going to open up things. And then also you got to try and eliminate some of the double team action that you're going to see either on McKenzie or Grace, depending upon who's on the floor and who has the hot hand. But I agree with you about Scalia. I agree with you about Parrish. I would be shocked if Grace Berger isn't working more on a three-point game right now in the summertime. I think she knows. I'm not saying she's told me this. I just think she, as a competitor, I think she knows if she wants to make that jump to the next level of the WNBA, for example, that she needs to have a little bit more range to the game that she can show them. I think that's the other thing. I still think we can grind out wins. I think that's always going to be, I'll be surprised if they lose that part of the identity. I just think that the grind it out is going to be more 73-69 rather than 59-56.
Yes, I agree with that. Back to our point with Scalia coming in, if Grace can, you know, continue, of course, with her mid-range, but then, you know, expand her range a little bit, Sydney come in, I think that's just going to open things up for McKenzie underneath as well. And hopefully she won't be quite as double-teamed as she was last year.
And the one thing that helps McKenzie get away from some of the double team is she showed last year, very, very small sample size, but she was going outside and shooting and hitting threes. I would imagine that she's got to have a little bit more of that for that next level as well, even though she'll be a post player, probably, but a post at the pro level who can step out and knock that shot down once in a while is going to have some value for that. And I'm sure they just really are looking at, you know, those are things they're trying to work on. So we'll thank Jared for his question from the community. And these questions did come from our community at assemblycall.com, where you can also join up. And I'll give you that information a little bit later. Now, Kathy, I'm going to break it down. One of our work, one of our dedicated workaholics here, Quang, asked kind of a series of questions that I just turned like into a five-parter. Because Quang was like, you know, he's like, here's a question. So we'll just try to take them all kind of. Number one, Kathy, and I'll go with, we'll kind of break it down. Will Coach Morin go deeper on the bench this season?
Yes. I think so. I think she has A, the players to do it, and two, I think we have to. If we really want to make a deep run into the tournament and come March, you're going to have to get a deeper bench than what we had last year.
I agree. I think she has to find a way to get to eight consistently for us to go a little bit, to make that deep, to make that final run to the final four. I think that's something that, you know, they have to be deeper, because you never know when foul trouble or an injury comes into play. And that's where the depth really has to get developed a little bit more. Number two, who will be the defensive stopper? We mentioned Nikki graduating. Alexa was a defensive player. Who will be the defensive stopper?
You know, that was a hard question for me. I saw that, and I'm not really quite sure where to go. I think you can go a number of ways. In theory, I think you could say Grace can step up and do that as the leader, knowing that this team hangs their hat on defense and really exhibit that. You know, who else kind of intrigues me to potentially fill that is Chloe Moore McNeil. I think she has great length, and she was showing her defense was improving, I think, as the year went on last year. So Chloe, to me, is definitely one that is right up there in the that came to the top of my mind. It's hard to know, though, with the transfers, because I haven't seen them really play. So I don't know how they are on defense. Of course, anytime a video clips you see of people, most of the time it's on their offense. So I really don't know where they might fit in. So I'm not going to comment on them.
Yeah, I think Grace would want to do it. I think Grace would want the challenge of saying, I'm going to go out and guard the other team's best player or a scorer. But I'm with you. I think right now, with what we know, Chloe Moore McNeil is that person who can be the defensive stopper. But I will also say this. I think we'll have to maybe get used to the idea that there isn't a true Nikki-type defender on this team, that you can just say, go guard the other team's ball handler and really disrupt everything. I think it's going to be much more of a off-the-ball defensive system where I think you'll see – and to me, that's where a Sydney Parrish, when I saw her in high school, I thought had one of the highest basketball IQs. I think that's where I think you see a Sydney Parrish maybe thrive a little bit, just like Grace has. Jump a passing lane, be in the right spot, you know, anticipate a pass and be able to create some havoc or a turnover that way. So, right now I'm with you. I would say Chloe, but I'm not sure. I would also say I'm not sure we'll have a true defensive stopper. Yeah. We've been kind of seeing this in the chat with the workaholics. Will the 3-point shooting be better?
Yeah, I think so. I think just the addition of Sarah Scalia alone, you know, is going to probably help our defense come on, but not just, you know, her coming in and shooting whatever the 500,000% that she shot last year against us, right, when she was up in Minnesota. I think Chloe as well showed some signs last year, and so she could just be a little more consistent. I think she's one that can really help us on the 3-point side too.
Well, and Parrish was a mid 30% type shooter at Oregon. I think she'll have a little better shooting here in Indiana. That's maybe more hope than factual. But I agree with you about Chloe. I agree about Scalia. I also think Grace has to shoot more, and she has, and hopefully, obviously, hit more. So, but if Grace Berger just hits 30% based over what she's done before, then that again opens up a ton of things for this offense.
Right. Absolutely.
Quang wanted to go. We want to know who he thought would start. I think we discussed this, this a few weeks ago with Seth Town.
Last week we talked.
Even last week.
We'll see if we change our.
Where were you, Quang?
Quang was too busy in the chat. He wasn't listening to us. okay. So who did we say? I think we had four players that we for sure penciled in as the four that we thought, which were McKenzie, Grace, Sydney, Parrish, and then Sarah Scalia, right? Mm-hmm. I think those were the four. And then in that fifth spot, we were leaning towards Alyssa Gary, but we also said perhaps freshman Yarden Garzon might maybe surprisingly sneak people in just because of her experience in the European League and how, you know, she might be with that. So I think that's where we kind of landed. Have you deviated from that?
No, and I think those are probably who you'll see, at least initially, until we get a better idea. Bargesser, I think, is still one that it will be interesting to see where she is with her knee injury. And then getting Gary in the portal probably gives I'm forgetting the girl from Meisner, the girl from Minnesota, Meisner, probably gives her a chance to learn off the bench a little bit more than she would have if we hadn't picked up an Alyssa Gary in the portal and had Alexa not come back. So, but I think those, we know the four solid, I think those four that we talked about are solid. This just a matter of where do you go with the Chloe Moore McNeil as the veteran returning, or do you go with the youngster out of Israel, Yarden, as, you know, as the fifth starter.
Yeah. And then and Joel does point out in the chat, his vote would be for Chloe Moore McNeil, I think, for that fifth spot because Coach Moore and wanting defense. And I can totally see that route as well. So I think that last fifth spot is probably open. I don't know, Jeff, do you think, and again, I can't remember off the top of my head, but does Coach Moore, she tends to stick with the same starting five throughout the year. So I don't think it'll change once we kind of see it, but I think there's a number of ways to go.
Generally, and the one person I think that we won't, that we've kind of neglected to mention is Keandra Brown. And I think coming back from her hip injury, she will be better and she'll be obviously able to play more. But I just don't know if there's a place for her other than as five. And right now that's max spot. Right. I don't see Keandra being at least a four. You know, I don't think we're going to play a double post type offense. I could be wrong. I just don't see where Keandra fits into the starting lineup. I think she can play lots of minutes, but I just, significant minutes, but I just don't know if she's going to start with the group that we have currently. And then last but not least for Quang, who will make the biggest jump in ability? Opinion here.
Yes. My opinion, again, I have no idea about freshmen coming in. I can't speak to them and how they're going to, and I don't know enough about the transfers. So I'm going only with the returning players and I'm going with Chloe Moore McNeil for my most improved. I think the growth we saw from her last year, from the time that she really started getting a lot of playing time, I hope that springboards her and her confidence into the off season to really put in the work that it's going to need to springboard her into our most improved player. So that's who I am expecting for biggest growth. Dark horse for me, Caitlin Peterson.
You just did mine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have just stopped after mine.
No, you're fine. Keep going.
So no, Caitlin going. Is my dark horse with that, just because we didn't see much of her last year. But when we did, every once in a while, we saw flashes that I think she could be something really special. So, Caitlin could be my other one.
I was going to go with Peterson just from the standpoint, I think, not saying that Chloe isn't going to make another big jump, but we've seen a little bit what Chloe can do. Right. We haven't seen that from Caitlin Peterson. She was a decent recruit. It wasn't like she was a no-star, one-star type recruit. She was considered a decent recruit, had a really good career down in Alabama high school, but really struggled last year fitting into the system. So I'm going to go with Caitlin Peterson here. That doesn't mean she's going to all of a sudden average 15, but I just think people are going to get an idea of what she's capable of doing going forward as we go through next year. So those were Quang's five-part question. And then last but not least here, Kathy, and this was a really good question from Tony Stuckey as well. Mm-hmm. As the women's game in the NCAA tournament continues to grow, do you think we will soon see any effort to place first and second round games in more neutral sites and by extension, make sure regional sites are picked so you don't have necessity of putting any given team in their own backyard?
I don't know Tony's definition of soon. So within the next 5 years, I could see that in the next 5 years. If, the popularity of women's basketball continue to grow as it has been especially the last couple of years, I can see that they'll eventually do that. I mean, again, the men's game was the same way. They used to have teams hosting and eventually they went to neutral sites. So that they're not in their own backyard. I don't even think the men do that. Like the number one overall seed, they usually get preferential treatment for geography, at least in that first opening weekend. So I think,
Well, even at the regional level, the number one seeds usually get.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. And just as an update, Ari is telling us the regionals are going down to two sites. Yeah. this year. So yeah, but I assume we were open and talking about just the opening weekends, right?
Well, with that, and I was going to bring that into the discussion a little bit, that next year, for some reason, I don't think the men are doing this, and maybe Ari can answer us in the chat, but the women are going to two regional sites. There'll be 8 teams at each regional next year. Still be kind of the format that we're used to as far as two regionals in terms of, those 4 teams, this 4 team, but I wonder if they think that's a cost cutting move or what, but I'm with you. I think they eventually will get to that first and second round being taken off campus, but I'm not sure how soon it will be. If it's within the next 5 years, great. I think it will help the growth of the game. But right now, you also still need kind of the draw of those, as we've talked about a couple of times, those blue bloods like UConn, like a Stanford, like South Carolina, yeah. like a Louisville, those types of blue bloods that can draw and get good gates and good crowds for those first and second, round games. So I'm not sure it'll be within the next 5 years. I really think that will help the women's game take off when it becomes that sophisticated to where they can be doing that. But it's a fine line there. You don't want to you definitely don't want to lose some of the revenue you're getting from the home schools being, putting in, like IU, great crowds this year when we played in Bloomington. So
yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah, we saw what Iowa did with them hosting as well, selling out. So
yeah. So you got anything else you want to talk about?
No, gosh, for an off-season show, this is one of our longest.
That's probably my fault.
I was pretty verbose there myself. So
so as we get ready for last call, we want to remind your fans, we'll be off for the next couple of weeks. Life events coming in here for Kathy and I, so we'll be off for the next couple of weeks. Watch Twitter and the Assembly Call community page to see when our next show will be. We're kind of targeting right now early to mid-July for our next show. AC Radio is scheduled to be on their regular show tomorrow night at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. They had something come up last week, literally almost at the last minute, that they had to cancel. So for anybody who thought that there wasn't they missed a show last week, it got canceled right at the last minute. Also in the community, there's an ongoing discussion for our fans who haven't seen this with Patrick Kent, aka Elbows In, who is one of the directors at Open Doors. They're really big in this NIL and really helping guide IU through the NIL, some of the NIL issues, especially with what the university can do, how to educate the athletes. You can ask him questions about NIL and collectives, and he will respond to those this week. He's been doing a great job there. So just a couple things there to point out with that. And then, like I said, Kathy, got any final thoughts that you want to throw in there about scheduling or anything that we just talked about?
No, I don't think I have anything left to add on to all that, Jeff. I'm just excited to see the schedule, I think. And then we can really talk about it in earnest. And yeah, I think later on this year, we're planning on, getting into more in depth of the Big Ten teams for sure. We'll start looking at the schedule and breaking those down as well. But no, I'm excited. I'm excited about the 2 early big top 25 and, cracking that top 15. And hopefully that gives them good incentive I think all the players are there now too, right?
Yes.
In town on campus. So hopefully they're all gelling and looking at some of those rankings and playing, getting that chemistry down. So no, I don't really have anything else.
All right. If you want to see us do the show live and be part of the live chat, like we've had a really excellent chat with the workaholics here tonight, Joel, Denny, Quang, Tony, among others, Ari, thank you for participating. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/assemblycall.com. And also make sure you sign up for our free IU Hoops newsletter, our email newsletter. We have almost 10,000, probably just over 10,000 subscribers now of your fellow IU fans. So join for free today at join.assemblycall.com. That's join.assemblycall.com. Special thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logo. And to thank all of you for listening. We'll be back soon or sometime next month to talk IU hoops again with you. Until then, keep your elbows in, your eyes on the rim. Go Hoosiers.
Nice job.
Nice job is right. It was. That went a little longer than I thought we would.
That went way longer than I thought it was. Yeah. So. I'm with Quang is evidently got a big trip coming up too. So
I see he's going to the Madison Regatta. If you call that a big I didn't even know they still had the Regatta Quang.
I didn't either. I don't even know what that is. So
it's speed. It's high. It's speedboat racing.
Oh, okay. That would be why I don't know what it is. Yeah. So
down on the aisle.
For those of you that are still listening, I'm going to India for work starting next week for like 2 weeks. So that's why no show for a couple of weeks. And I'll probably need a week to figure out what time zone I'm on, Jeff. So maybe not the first week in July.
No, and plus that's kind of the 4th of July in there as well. And I'm going at the end of June to, I got some family things and we got baseball with my son, travel ball and stuff. So it's just hectic right now, but we'll try and get back maybe like, I want to say it's like July 13th. So that second Wednesday, Wednesday in July. So for all of our fans, don't go away on us. We just have to take care of some life events that, for us. And honestly, right now it is kind of a slow time. I mean, we talked about way too early top 25 and a little bit of scheduling, but there's just, other than the few things we talked about at the beginning news-wise, it's really kind of a slow period right now. So just hopefully you'll all be back with us in July and we'll pick it up there and see what we're doing. We want to reward all of our listeners who stuck with us through and been with us since the beginning. We didn't want to just go the entire summer with no broadcast, so the entire off season. We want everybody to stay engaged.
Look around. You can find cars like these on Auto Trader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.